10 minutes after 8, the morning show with Greg Berg is next. Support for WGTD comes from Jack Andrea, a Kenosha tradition since 1911, newly reimagined for 2018. A unique shopping experience time and time again, and that's what brings you back. More information at jackandrea.com. Jack Andrea, a proud supporter of WGTD's morning show. Support for the morning show also comes from Carthage College, welcoming approximately 150 full-time transfer students each year. Eligible Gateway graduates can receive guaranteed admission to Carthage to complete their bachelor's degrees. Transfer to a more personalized education in 4 easy steps. More information about admissions and competitive scholarships for transfers is available at carthage.edu/admissions/transfers. And we welcome you to the Wednesday morning show on WGTD HD, your gateway to public radio. I'm Gregory Berg, and I'm very, very excited to be able to be sitting across the table once again from Nancy Matthews from the Kenosha Public Museum. Nancy, remind me of your illustrious position there.
I am Director of Interpretation and actually right now more project manager for a new permanent exhibit that's scheduled to open next year.
Fantastic. Very good. And it's good to have you back here at the morning show, specifically to talk about the Pike River Rendezvous, which is such an exciting event. And which event is this now?
This is the 21st year.
Incredible. And so we're going to be talking about that today with Nancy Matthews and with Edna Lowe, who is one of the enactors who is part of the event, and we welcome you as well to the morning show.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
Good to have you here. So, Nancy, we have talked about this before, of course, but I'm always mindful of people who are new to the community and who do not have any idea, first of all, of what the Pike River Rendezvous is or of how it came into being. And I think it's such an interesting story, so it's worth retelling. So take us back 22 years to what got this rolling.
Sure. This all came about when one of the City of Kenosha officials decided that we needed to have an educational, fun history, living history event, and really wanted to kind of showcase one of Kenosha's underutilized parks on the north side of Kenosha. And Todd Ingerwell from the Parks Department worked with some reenactors to bring the event about at Poreo Park on the north side of Kenosha. And it was really meant to be really an educational event for families to learn about the fur trading era. And it was hoped that over time that it would grow to include just beyond the fur trading era. We've pretty much stuck to the fur trading era, but it's such an important era in U.S., not only U.S., but Canadian history from 1650 to 1850. And when you think about everything that happened during that time period, I mean, The boundaries between Canada and the U.S. were set. Many state boundaries were set. We have the American Revolution that takes place during this time period. Westward expansion, all of that takes place within that 200-year time period, plus a lot of European exploration going on at that time, too.
Yeah, it's an incredibly rich portion of our history, and it's also a portion of our history that, aside from the high points of the Revolutionary War, the typical American just doesn't begin to understand.
Right, and that's what this event is about, is to help people really kind of step back in time and talk with the reenactors who are living the history for the weekend to find out what life was like during this time period. And we have some reenactors that go way back to the beginning of the fur trading era, some that are more in the middle, and then some like Edna and Leslo that are more towards the end of the fur trading era. So you really get the whole kind of gamut of that 200-year period of time.
Well, speaking of the whole gamut of history, talking about the history of this particular event, and again, this is the 21st Pike River Rendezvous that will be occurring this coming weekend. Take us back to that very first one and what it was like to put this event together, I mean, from scratch, particularly an event not really like any other. I mean, certainly it came about at a time when reenactment was kind of really becoming kind of all the rage, but that doesn't mean that there were events exactly like this highlighting this particular part of history. How did you and others go about assembling this out of thin air, in a sense?
Yeah, well, the very first year, I was kind of peripheral because it really was Todd and the reenactors, Don Lovelace and Ernie and Kathy Craik. Edna, were there others that you know of that were at the beginning?
It was pretty much the core group.
Yeah, and so they came together. Don and Kathy and Ernie knew the reenactors, and Todd worked for the city in the Parks Department, so they really were the initial organizers. They contacted the museum to see if we wanted to participate, and because our then curator of exhibits and collections, Dan Joyce, who is now our executive director, has been involved in reenactments forever, it seems like, brought some items from the museum, and he set up camp, and I organized some educational activities for kids to do. So it was a small event, excuse me, to begin with, but it took, I don't know, maybe 4 or 5 years for us to really outgrow Poreo Park. And then fortunately, the first year of the Tall Ships came into Kenosha, we were invited to move the event down to Simmons Island, and Simmons Island has been our home ever since. I have taken on more of an organizational role, calling the meetings, making sure that, you know, all of the T's are crossed and the I's dotted. And I thank you for the compliment of telling me or calling me the heart and soul, but it really is the reenactors who bring this time period to life. And we're expecting about 400 reenactors this year to set up about 150 camps on the island. And again, representing the whole gamut of this 200 years of the fur trading era.
For those of you just joining us on the morning show today, we're talking about this weekend's 21st Pike River Rendezvous, which occurs essentially Saturday and Sunday for the public. The reenactors arrive, of course, and set up camp, I think, a late Friday.
Well, actually, they'll start arriving today.
Oh, okay.
And then they'll just kind of trickle in, but probably by Friday, most everybody will be set up.
Like a resettling of the Old West.
You got it. You got it.
But a resettling of Simmons Island. And in just a little bit, we're going to be talking with Edna Lowe, who is one of the reenactors. And I'm very excited to kind of talk about that whole phenomenon of reenacting and what it's like to do that and where all that kind of comes from. Nancy, for somebody who has never been to the Pike River Rendezvous, I think it's important for us to try to create as clear a picture as we possibly can of what it's like to walk through it. I mean, that when you get to Simmons Island, what is it that you see and what is the experience sort of meant to be?
Well, actually, your experience can start in the parking lot. we encourage people to park in Kennedy Park in the grass, and then you can take a horse-drawn wagon shuttle to the reenactment. It will drop you right off at the so-called front door. And again, you will experience all camps from, you know, going back to 1650 up to the middle 1800s. And there will be a variety of types of houses. We have tents, canvas tents of all shapes and sizes. You will see teepees kind of in the center of the encampment. So those reenactors are reenacting a later part of the fur trading era, when the fur trade era actually moved further west and we get into the mountain men era, when men were living in the mountains and trapping in the mountains and trading with more Western American Indian tribes there. So the fur trade era, just it's a fascinating period of history, and I'm not going to get into a lot of dates and stuff because that's not my interest in history. I like the social part of history. But in Europe, in going back before this time period, you know, 1400s, 1500s, hats made out of beaver felt. And beaver felt is made out of the really soft under fur of the beaver. And that was taken off, and it was, through a process, felted and turned into a very sturdy and basically weatherproof, rainproof material. And everybody had to have a hat made out of beaver felt, at least those who could afford it. But hats were such an important part of attire in Europe. Farmers had to have it to protect them from the sun and the rain and the snow. Even if you think about the clergy all wore beaver hats, and they were a particular style. Military wore beaver hats, and the different style of beaver hat that you wore indicated what branch of the military that you were in.
Wow.
So if you think of, like, the Navy and kind of the hats that they wore, and the tri-corner hats of the American Revolution, those are beaver felt hats as well.
Wow.
So the hat that you wore indicated your profession. So, and of course, the aristocracy wore more of the top hat style of beaver felt. But by about 1500, beavers had been eliminated or were close to extinction in Europe. So as explorers were starting to move out of Europe, and actually some of the English explorers that were hitting Canada and the Grand Banks discovered there was wonderful fishing there, they started moving closer and closer to the North American shoreline, and, you know, ended up on shore and discovered there were people living here and that they were trapping beaver and other animals such as fox and ermine and muskrat, which have wonderful furs as well, and that these could be traded for things that the explorers and the fishermen had on boats, you know, knives and axes and things that actually made life of the American Indians a whole lot easier, because during this time, you know, you're cutting down trees with stone axes. A metal axe is much more efficient. So really, that's how it all started, just kind of this casual entrance into North America. And I don't mean to say that lightly, because the explorers from Europe obviously had a huge impact on the American Indian peoples all across North America.
And not all positive, of course.
And not all positive. In fact, a lot of it negative. And one impact, one thing that Europeans brought with them that had probably the biggest impact on American Indian culture was the introduction of diseases that American Indians had never been exposed to, and probably decimated about 75% of the American Indian population in North America.
Wow. I had not heard that statistic. That's certainly disturbing.
It is.
And something to regret. At any rate, the story of this fur trade then is of how something that, as you just characterized, began fairly informally on a relatively modest scale becomes a matter of extraordinary commerce, and becomes, from the sounds of it, quite an intricate system of trade.
Yeah, it was. And it really was the first major industry in North America. And Hudson Bay Company, Northwest Company, large trading companies, mercantiles, were set up to develop these trading relationships with the American Indians, who were doing a lot of the trapping and then trading with the these larger mercantile companies. And the larger companies were sending voyagers in large birch bark canoes into the interior of North America to establish these trade networks. And I was just doing some reading about this yesterday, kind of in preparation for today, that one type of canoe was called the Montreal canoe, and it went out from Montreal, but it was 40 feet long and 6 feet wide.
Wow.
And could carry up to 5,000 pounds of trade goods. And that doesn't include the men who were steering the canoe.
Incredible.
But these are massive canoes that are carrying all of these trade goods in and then gathering up the furs and carrying them back. They were then shipped to Europe and to Russia. Russia was very much a part of this trade network as well.
Hmm. So what would be, in a sense, the sort of points of operation in this network of trade? Because those points of operation, of course, are part of what ultimately is depicted in the Pike River Rendezvous. I mean, what are we talking about that would serve as sort of the focal points and also the means of connection to make this network function?
Yeah, the network was really comprised of three different groups. So you had the traders and the merchants, and then the voyagers, and then the American Indians. And so the traders and the merchants were the ones that were, gathering the trade goods, and then getting the voyagers, and then sending them off. And so at the rendezvous, what we should probably define what a rendezvous is. So during the fur trading era, rendezvous were actually larger events when there were predestined locations where the voyagers and the American Indians would gather for these huge trading experiences. And probably one of the biggest one in this area was at Grand Portage up in Minnesota.
Hmm.
And Grand Portage is still a big reenactment today. So during a rendezvous, the American Indians and the voyagers and the merchants would all know that at this time we're going to gather here and we're going to exchange goods and services, because the American Indians would provide services of tanning hides and stringing snowshoes and all kinds of other useful services that they could provide as well. So at our rendezvous, it's not so much the trading, but it's the coming together to experience the history firsthand, to see what a teepee was like. We're actually going to have soldiers from the War of 1812 that will be there. What was it like for those soldiers riding a horse? What was it like for some of the early settlers that were moving westward with the fur trade? And all of the reenactors for the Pike River Rendezvous are hand-selected for their the quality of their camp and their ability to talk to the public.
And really make this all come
alive. And make
alive.
It come alive, exactly.
So these rendezvous would, generally speaking, happen at the very same point in time in the calendar year, for
exactly.
instance?
It
would
yeah.
be at the beginning of August or the beginning of December or whatever made sense.
I think they were usually in the summer, because they starting off from Montreal, obviously in a canoe, it's going to take you a while to get to Minnesota. And you have to portage over some areas because of rapids or waterfalls. And so it would take some time to get there. But you want to make sure that you get there in time, and then you have time to get back before all of the waterways are frozen over. So, timing was essential.
Right. And do we have any sense of how long these, for instance, the rendezvous at Grand Portage, are we talking about something that would go on for days, weeks, months, or is that?
And it wouldn't be months. I don't know, maybe a week,
something
I'm,
like
yeah.
Wow. You know, it's interesting. As you were talking about it, I'm thinking to myself, oh, I would give anything to be there. I mean, just what did that look like? What did it feel like, sound like? And then you realize that's part of what the Pike River Rendezvous is all about, is to give us at least an inkling of what these rendezvous were like. I mean, what it was like to be there.
Yeah, I would expect it would be rather loud and sometimes raucous because...
That's where Edna comes in.
Yeah, well, I don't know that Edna's very raucous, but it was not only a time for doing business, but also a time for a little bit of partying. So,
and, of course, that feeds wonderfully into this whole notion of why there's a Pike River Rendezvous and what this event can be, not just sort of a dry retelling of history, but also to try to convey its spirit.
Exactly. And it is such a fun family event. I want to emphasize fun and free. It's free parking, free shuttle to the site. There's no admission. We do ask for donations to help with all of the entertainment. The more donations we get, the more entertainment and activities we can have. So we appreciate donations. There are donation boxes at all of the entrances. And the event is sponsored by the City of Kenosha and in conjunction with the museums and the Parks Department. We couldn't do this event without the help of the Parks Department, who sets up all of the fencing and makes sure that we've got connections to water and that the reenactors have ice to keep their food chilled over the weekend. And that, you know, all of the garbage cans are in place and the porta potties are in place. And so the Parks Department is really essential. And then Chris Coachman from the city, she's a special events coordinator and liaison for the city, and she does all of the publicity and make sure that we have all of the forms filed with the city for the event. So it really is a joint collaboration between all of the entities.
We're speaking with Nancy Matthews from the Kenosha Public Museum, and now we're going to begin speaking with Edna Lowe, and she and her husband have both been in the business of reenacting for many, many years, and they are part of this 21st Pike River Rendezvous, which is going to be happening both Saturday and Sunday at Simmons Island. It's great to have you here. Edna, tell us, first of all, how you first became acquainted with the whole notion of reenactment and then got the idea that this was something that you yourself would enjoy doing. Where did this begin?
Well, this connection started years ago. My husband worked with Ernie Craik at Grove Gear in Union Grove, Wisconsin. And my interest in history went way back, especially American history. So it was a natural fit, actually. Ernie and Les worked together, as I said, Les was there for 36 years, and Ernie was about the same time. And just visit Pike River, see what's happening. We did that, and you get ringed into it, especially if you've got an interest in history. It looks like it's a great thing. We call this our retirement hobby, which is, I guess, an oxymoron if you think about lifting and setting up and living in cooler temperatures and kind of the pioneer life. We've really enjoyed it. This will be about our 16th year, I think, at Pike River.
Wow. So it was actually, if I understood you correctly, it was from visiting the Pike River Rendezvous that you got the idea of being one of those reenactors that you saw doing this.
Yeah, basically my husband's employment with Ernie Craik, who was an organizer of this event.
So that's how you knew about it,
right,
and so on.
Exactly.
But it sounds like part of what got you excited was just experiencing it yourself.
Absolutely. It was kind of a journey like the actual pioneers when you first start this hobby. It's collecting this, that, and the other thing, and that looks pretty neat. We ought to have that. And as you get into this hobby, down the line, you're talking about lifting and carrying and transporting all these goods. It becomes kind of like the voyage westward for these pioneers. Huh. It's thrown out of the wagon and not taken to the next one.
Yeah, fantastic. So when, for instance, you are reenacting for the Pike River Rendezvous this weekend. Do you have, in a sense, a character that you are portraying? And is it someone with a name, or do you just use your own name? And in terms of backstory, I mean, how do you, in a sense, create the person you are portraying?
Well, this is pretty much a natural fit. My husband's family goes back to 1792, coming from Europe westward to America. They began their journey on the East Coast and migrated west through Indiana and ultimately landed in southwest Missouri, and that's pretty much following their history. It's pretty interesting if you think about what these folks did to survive in this country and build their future.
Right. So you and your husband this weekend will be together portraying a couple at the Pike River Rendezvous?
That's right.
And at, in that particular time in the late 18th century, that's the point in time that you are portraying, in a sense?
Yeah, our time frame basically is 1830s, early 1830s, when the land was being surveyed around here. Before the actual settlement began, land offices will open in Milwaukee in 1836, and hopefully that will provide some land for us coming westward. You know, development is a great thing, but you know what development does to land prices.
Mm.
So if you're on the East Coast and this country is growing, and there's this notion of cheaper land out west and opportunity, that's pretty much drove a lot of people this way.
That was the big draw. So what are you living in and sleeping in this weekend?
Well, we have an authentic lodge, which is a canvas tent. It's those tents that you see are waterproofed and flameproof to a certain extent. It's nice to have wood-fired cooking over the weekend. It's interesting to hear visitors say, "I love the smell of that smoke."
Mm.
The other part of that, it does keep the mosquitoes away. So it has another benefit beside that. But it's great to see families coming through with children, because this is such a foreign lifestyle compared to today's world.
Of course. So when we're talking about, you use the term lodge, but it's more of a tent. So
Right. How
large is it, and does it have more than one room? I mean, how cozy is it in there?
Well, basically, it looks like a small house with a porch. The area that's in the front of the tent is typically called a fly, and that is your protection in the from the sun, and your front porch, actually. That is one of the questions we get quite frequently. Where do you sleep, or do you sleep here? Yes, of course we do. When you go through all this work, you're going to enjoy it, at least in the evening, and that's one of the nicer things about these reenactments, is the community spirit that you see among people. It's like an old-fashioned neighborhood.
Right. So you and your husband, in terms of who you are at the Pike River Rendezvous, what function do you perform in this whole free trade business? Are you traders or merchants or just sort of innocent bystanders?
Well, basically, we're pioneers coming westward. And we do demonstrate furs with kids. That's another foreign idea to them. But Nancy mentioned the rendezvous time frame. We always ask kids, why did they do the trapping in the winter time? Well, those furs were more luxurious and brought more money at rendezvous.
Ah, because the animal had to develop a thicker fur during the winter. What are you wearing this weekend?
Basically, I wear homemade clothes. Les has shirts that I've made myself based on patterns from that era. It's mostly cotton material, which is a wonderful, wonderful fabric.
Hmm. Nancy, in general, how do reenactors function in terms of interacting with the public, and what are they told to do?
Well, again, each of the reenactor camps are selected because of the quality of their camp and their ability to convey their particular part in history to the public. Many of the reenactors will have items out for visitors to see, to touch. They will be demonstrating different crafts and trades from the time period. Actually, Dan Joyce will be at the museum camp demonstrating blacksmithing, which is new classes that we're offering at the museum. So he's going to be bringing out his forge and will be blacksmithing all weekend. It doesn't sound like the weather's going to be great for blacksmithing this weekend because it's going to be warm.
It'll be warm.
But candle making, weaving, tatting, flint napping, making stone tools. We've had gentlemen who tans hides. So you can see all of those different kinds of trades and skills that these early colonists and settlers of North America, as well as we have American Indian encampment. So you can see a wigwam and talk with people about, you know, their part in this 200-year time period.
Mm. So you talk about these reenactors who are out there, and in a sense, you select the very best to be part of the Pike River Rendezvous. So these are people who are, in a sense, already doing this. Where else do they do this? Or, I mean, what other opportunities are there to reenact?
Well, as a reenactor, Edna can probably answer that best. There are reenactments all over. And actually, Edna and Les have organized a reenactment in Union Grove.
Yes, we have one the second weekend of October. And this is our 13th year, I believe, out there. And we do have a school day on Friday where we invite area schools to come in and visit. That's been a fun event, and we've had as many as 250 kids there or more on a Friday. Another event we've done in Fort Atkinson, we have about 1,200 kids on that school day Friday, which is, again, sharing that history with those kids, so important.
But you can find reenactments all over the Midwest. Another big one is in Lafayette, Indiana, in the fall, Feast of the Hunter's Moon. I've been to some in northern Wisconsin. Obviously, Grand Portage is one of the big ones, and there are several throughout Michigan, Wisconsin, Minnesota. And you'll notice that I'm talking primarily about northern states because that's primarily where the fur trade was.
Right.
Because, as Edna mentioned, the beaver furs were prime in these northern states because of our cold winters.
Right. So you're not going to find this kind of event down in Arizona.
Probably not in Florida, no.
Right.
You might find other historical reenactments, but probably not of the fur trading era.
Right. So, and Edna, please chime in on this. So, for instance, the typical reenactor who is part of this weekend's event, do they do other kinds of reenactments that, for instance, wouldn't fit into this time frame or geographical framework? I mean, does the typical reenactor reenact maybe several different characters out of several different eras?
Yeah, that does happen. Many of these events are what they call timelines, where there isn't a cap on time frame like the 1840s at Pike River. Many do include Civil War. And my husband actually portrays General Lee at some of those, which is quite interesting. There is an event following the next weekend following Pike River that's in the town of Lisbon, and that is a timeline event. 2 weeks later than that, there's one in West Allis, which you would never figure would happen, but they have a wonderful museum up there, and it's on the grounds there at Honey Creek, and that is another timeline. And Union Grove is also a timeline where we have Civil War reenactors. The kids out there love to hear that cannon fire.
I suppose. So Nancy, since we're talking about a wide swath of history, actually, how is the camp kind of geographically organized? Is it, in a sense, organized where you're traveling from time period to time period to time period, or not so much?
Well, not necessarily. We do have the teepees all grouped together in the center. All of the our traders, you can buy souvenirs from our merchants, and there are food vendors are all kind of located together. But some of the reenactors are what we call blanket traders, and they might be, if they're doing weaving, like Edna has done weaving on looms and finger weaving before, she might be selling some of her wares as a blanket trader.
Hmm.
And we have our voyagers that are down, actually camped by the lake, down by the beach, and the pirates are down there. And then the American Indian encampment tends to be on the north end of the camp. So there is a little bit of organization, but you're not going to see, you're going from the 1650s to the 1750s to 1850s.
Right.
In the encampment.
We should also probably explain that part of the experience is just walking through and seeing what you see and speaking to the reenactors, but there are also very specific events, timed events that happen at particular points in the day. And probably would be good for us to talk about some of the most notable ones, at least.
Sure, and we encourage all visitors to the Pike River Rendezvous to pick up a schedule when they arrive, because that will tell you exactly when everything is happening. We have a wide variety of events on both Saturday and Sunday, and I do want to mention that the encampment is open on Friday. But there is no shuttle service and there are no scheduled events, but you're free to come in and walk around. We do have, unlike daycares and day camps, that will come in on Friday. But again, there's no shuttle service and no scheduled events. There are competitions that people can engage in. There's knife throwing and hawk throwing, tomahawk throwing. We have Jill McCray, who's coming with her horse from Illinois and is going to be doing a demonstration of horse dressage, of how horses were put through their movements just by simple body actions. And so she's going to be with us both days this year. She came last year for the first time. We have musical performances, and actually some of the camps, if the reenactors play musical instrument, they might be spontaneously playing. But we do have scheduled events. Colonel Webb's Band of Music and the Heritage Dancers will be performing. Three Pints Gone is another musical performing group, and they will be performing both days as well. Andre Saint-Pierre will be doing storytelling, and on both days at 11 o'clock, on both Saturday and Sunday, we will have our famous pirate battle, where the pirates will be storming the beach and the colonists will be trying to fend them off. So that is always one of the highlights of the event. And then the amazing Budabi brothers. Unfortunately, only one of the brothers is going to be with us this year, but he does amazing juggling acts in period costume. So that is always fun. The Kenosha Public Museum this year we've moved our location so that we're a little bit closer to the action, and we're bringing actually one of our birch bark canoes from the museum, and we'll have a wide variety of furs for people to touch, so we can really get more in depth into what the fur trading era was all about. Kids are encouraged to make a corn husk doll. And we'll have daily chore activities. And new this year for the Kenosha Public Museum, we're going to have mini archaeological digs. Dan Joyce has done some archaeology on Simmons Island because of the history, the American Indian history with the Potawatomi, having encampments there. And also, Simmons Island is supposedly the site of the first tavern in Kenosha.
Well.
So he's been looking for that. So we'll talk about the archaeological history of the island, and kids can actually dig in the sand and see what they can find.
I like that. What about food and drink for sale? I suspect you don't find a bag of Lay's potato chips at this event.
No, probably not. Not unless one of the reenactors has it hidden in their tent.
naughty.
But yes, we do have food available and beverages. Our big food vendor is Two Eagles, and they will be selling a variety of fry bread and other kind of period-esque foods.
So there's a real effort to make everything sort of flow out of a sense of authenticity.
Right, right.
I should think that, I mean, although I saw there's a limit, but I'm guessing that even when it comes to things like porta potties and trash barrels and so on, that you also try to do what you can so those aren't kind of intruding into the ambiance of the experience as a whole.
Well, porta potties and garbage cans are necessities,
of course, that
we have to have. Unfortunately, we don't really disguise the trash cans. We want people to see them trash there. Porta potties are kind of kept on the periphery of the encampment. Those are very important things. I mean, not only for the visitors, but also for the reenactors.
Of course, absolutely.
If you're camping for the weekend on the island, you want those facilities available.
Absolutely, for sure. So every detail very much attended to. So I'm curious, and Edna, actually, maybe I'll direct this first to you. The event, for instance, on Saturday goes until 5, and the event on Sunday goes until 4. For instance, Saturday night, I suspect the typical reenactor, even someone like you who just lives in nearby Union Grove, you're not going home Saturday night. So what goes on Simmons Island in the evening on Saturday, for instance?
Well, typically you have a potluck with your campmates. Over the years, you develop a lot of great friendships, and it's kind of a reunion type thing when you get together on these weekends. And as I mentioned before, that wood-fired cooking really makes for a delicious Saturday evening dinner. And many of the reenactors are also musicians. And when you're listening to music by candlelight, that's kind of a neat thing to do. Storytelling and things of that nature, but good friends and good families, good food all the way around. It's just your typical old neighborhood type thing, which is another glimpse back into the past, and it's still happening, at least at the Pike River Rendezvous.
Fantastic. Nancy, you were saying, if I heard you correctly, some 400 reenactors, is that right?
Yes.
I mean, that's staggering to think about the size of this event now compared to, especially to its modest beginnings.
Right. And I don't remember how many camps we had in the beginning, maybe a couple of dozen. So now it's grown to about 150 camps, and each camp will have, I mean, like the minimum of two people. I know Ernie and Kathy Craik, their son, their daughter, their grandchildren are all in their camp. So in some cases, they're multi-generational camps. We're bringing up the younger generation to hopefully take over this event.
Wow. Very, very good. So let's recap a couple of important essentials for people to know, and particularly for people who might be visiting the Pike River Rendezvous this weekend for the very, very first time. So where exactly is it that they go, and what exactly can they expect?
So the Pike River Rendezvous is this weekend, Saturday, August 4th, and Sunday, August 5th. The camp on Saturday is open to the public from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. and 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. on Sunday. And if you're there after 4 p.m. on Sunday, just look out, because the reenactors are packing up and moving out, because some of them have to get back to work on Monday. It is free and open to the public. It is a wonderful family event. Parking is free. We encourage you to park in Kennedy Park. And there is the horse-drawn wagon shuttle that runs from Kennedy Park to the reenactment. There are all kinds of vendors selling wonderful things, and food vendors as well. So it looks like it's going to be a steamy weekend, but it's always wonderful to be right down at the lakefront. Simmons Island is right on the lakefront in downtown Kenosha. It's pretty easy to find. And we hope to see a lot of people this year. Next year is going to be a very exciting year for us, the 22nd annual Pike River Rendezvous, because it will be held in conjunction with the Tall Ships Festival. So the lakefront will be hopping the first weekend in August next year.
Right, right. Well, it's certainly going to be a busy, bustling place this weekend as well. And we should mention, because you mentioned it to me before we went on the air, that you are actually going to be retiring from the Kenosha Public Museum sometime in this coming spring. So at least in terms of being at the helm, this marks, in a sense, the end of an era for you.
Yes, it does, sadly.
Yeah. So I should think you have to look back at the last 20 years or so and the way that this event has grown and feel a great sense of gratitude and satisfaction about that.
Oh, I do, absolutely. And it has been such a joy and a pleasure and an honor to have been part of this. I have never been part of a living history event before and didn't really know a lot about the fur trading era. So I continue to read about it and learn new things all the time. And, you know, that's one thing about retirement that I'm really looking forward to, learning more about the fur trading era and other periods of history, not only by participating in living history events, but doing some traveling and visiting some of these places outside of Kenosha and outside of Wisconsin.
Well, I guess we'll allow that to happen.
Thank
but
you.
But still, it's with certainly mixed feelings that this era comes to a close, because I've always enjoyed these conversations with you. I've learned so much from you, and I'm glad that you're not quite yet done at the museum and that you're surely going to be back on the morning show at least one more time before your retirement and to talk about all of the great things going on at the Kenosha Public Museum and that whole network, of course, of museums in downtown
sure.
Kenosha, which is such an extraordinary resource.
Yeah, and I want to thank you for giving us this time to promote this wonderful family event. It's been a real pleasure to be able to share it with you and the WGTD listeners. I mean, going back to the little bitty booth at the old building when we,
yeah.
we first talked about the rendezvous. So
everybody's grown, haven't they?
Yes,
and
we have.
That's part of what it's all
it's
about.
It's a good thing.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. And Edna Lowe, I'm so glad to be able to speak to someone who is in this business of reenacting you and your husband, who's actually in the studio with you. I suspect that reenacting is something you plan on continuing to do for as long as time and life permits.
Well, it's an interesting hobby, and actually Les hit 80 years in October, and I hit 79 in June. So you can see it's keeping us moving, which is a great thing. As I told Mr. Craik, Ernie Craik, you know, we started on this when you had all those few camps over at Peoria Park, and we have our event in Union Grove, which is the half point stopping place between Burlington and Racine, and we do call it half point, and I've told Ernie it's half pint compared to Pike River.
Right.
And
but
it's a great event.
Of course, I think that's absolutely wonderful, and how great that you helped to shepherd that into existence, and I also think it's wonderful that it was a visit to the Pike River Rendezvous that inspired the two of you to not just be spectators, but be participants as well. So
yep.
Absolutely great. So Edna Lowe, she and her husband Les will be among this small army of 400-some reenactors on Simmons Island this weekend for the 21st annual Pike River Rendezvous, both Saturday and Sunday. The event opens each day, Saturday and Sunday morning at 9, closing Saturday at 5, Sunday at 4. So Edna Lowe and Les Lowe, thank you for being here. And Nancy Matthews, thank you so much for all of these wonderful conversations and all that you've done for the Kenosha Public Museum over the years.
Thanks, Greg.
We're approaching 9 o'clock here on WGTD. Tomorrow on the morning show, two different conversations. You'll hear a portion of my conversation with Casey Sherman, a best-selling author whose most recent book is titled 12, and it tells the story of the quarterback of the New England Patriots, Tom Brady, and his amazing comeback from a very public and embarrassing setback that occurred a couple of seasons ago. It's a very, very interesting book. We'll also spend part of tomorrow's morning show as well with Jerry Mast, political science professor at Carthage College, talking about the upcoming midterm elections, which, of course, are so very, very crucial in many, many ways.